Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Autism spectrum disorders is a group of developmental disabilities that can cause significant social, communication, and behavioral challenges. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that an average of 1 in 68 children in the U.S. is on the autism spectrum. This is about 3.5 million Americans. 1% of the world's population lives with this disorder. The characteristics behaviors of autism spectrum disorder may be apparent in infancy, about 18 to 24 months, but they usually become clearer during early childhood, about 24 months to 6 years. We will discuss autism on the program today. Joining us via phone from Rockville, Maryland, is Jaylene Prince. She is president of Madison House Autism Foundation, which is headquartered in Rockville outside of Washington, D.C. Ms. Prince, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be with you today.
It's great to have you on the program. Also joining us from Nigeria, Lagos, is Dr. Alayinka Akindayomi. She's Service Director of Children Developmental Center in Surulere, Lagos, Nigeria. Dr. Akindayomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Okay. It's good for you to join us all the way from Lagos. And we're really excited about this conversation because we would like to get both perspectives from the United States and Africa and see how this challenging issue is being addressed. And let me remind our listeners, if you'd like to participate in the show with your question or comment, call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can ask your international operator to reverse the charges if you are calling outside of the United States. You can also email us your thoughts and questions at healthchat@voanews.com or email them or facebook.com/voahealthchat. We will start discussing autism shortly with both our guests, but first, VOA's reporter Art Chimes reports on the possible link between autism and pollution. Take a listen.
In earlier studies, researchers at the Medical School of the University of Rochester in New York State exposed mice to air pollution, then gave them behavioral tests. Research leader Professor Deborah Corey Slechta says the pollution-breathing mice did worse on tests of mental functioning compared with mice that got clean air to breathe. The ones exposed to pollution did worse in a learning test, and the results were the same when they tested memory.
You could see, again, there were deficits in that short-term memory, and those we also saw in both males and females.
The research team decided to see if the pollution was having any physical effect on the laboratory animals' brains, so they launched a new study. When they examined the brains of the pollution-breathing mice, they found the lateral ventricles, a part of the brain's circulatory system, were 2 to 3 times normal size. Corey Slechta says that in humans, this enlargement is associated with autism, schizophrenia, and more.
It's an indicator of poor development. It's a prognosis for poor development of children with behavioral, IQ, cognitive, and other kinds of deficits that will persist.
In addition, structures that communicate between left and right halves of the brain were not fully developed in the pollution-breathing mice. The laboratory animals were exposed to polluted air just days after birth, and their brains were tested soon after. But the same impairment was found when the brains of several months old mice were examined, indicating the damage does not go away. The polluted air in this experiment was made up of ultra-fine particles, which are believed to be more dangerous because they are small enough to get deep into the lungs and into the bloodstream. Corey Slechta says her research may help explain why a number of other studies have shown a statistical link between air pollution and autism.
Our data basically, we think, provide a biological plausibility for that kind of association.
The research paper by Deborah Corey Slechta and her colleagues is published in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. This is Art Chimes reporting.
And again, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Let me start with you, Ms. Prince. This report talks about possible link between pollution and autism. As of now, we are not clear as to what causes autism, right? I mean, can you comment on this? Ms. Prince? Jaylene Prince? Is she there?
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you, yes.
All right. There may be several types of autism, and it probably isn't a singular thing like there isn't a singular type of cancer, whereas there may be several different types of things that cause autism. It could be environmental. There could be genetic components. There could be other types of things that would manifest itself as autism.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Dr. Akindayomi, you in Nigeria are dealing with this issue as well. This is a global problem,
yes,
indeed. Can you tell us how it is affecting children in your country?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of controversy throughout the world. So obviously in Africa, where little is known about autism, there's a lot of confusion here. As a result, the children are unrecognized. The impact of autism on the families is not fully understood. And as a result of that, there's very little funding in way of planning services and meeting the needs of the families and the children. So because of all the confusion, it tends to affect these families a lot more than other children with other disabilities.
Very good point there. The impact on family on families, as Dr. Alayinka, may I call you Dr. Alayinka? I think that's the first name.
No problem.
As she mentioned, is a reality, and it's not just an issue in Nigeria. Perhaps Ms. Prince, you can come in on my next question, because one thing that both of you ladies have in common is you both have children with autism, and if you could perhaps share, Ms. Prince, your experience as to when you found out and the type of impact that you've been experiencing before you got involved.
Well, we discovered that there were some indicators very early on. In fact, I probably had indicators prenatally with my son not responding to sounds that my other children had responded to even before they were born. So we probably had some indicators, but we didn't start living with this idea until he was about 4 years old, after we'd had some additional testing. And it has been a huge challenge for him. He's very severely impacted by his autism. Mm-hmm. And we have two additional children in the family. And at the time, I had an 80-year-old mother living with us at the same time. And the impact on family is absolutely immense. And as we processed through all of the things that autism means and the different types of learning and the accommodations that are made for the individual, because it's often easier, though not really easy, for the more neurotypical children to adapt to an autistic individual than vice versa. Although there's an effort to try to merge the two, to try to make a family happen and be successful. Madison has been our inspiration. Our particular slice of this pie happens to be working with those that are adults on the autism spectrum, though we have lived 24/7 through this full developmental time. We see that there are even fewer resources available for families, and still very often a great deal of havoc that comes into a family coping with autism even after the age of 21.
Wow. And Madison is how old now?
He's now 26.
26. And this is a critical issue. When we talk about autism, a lot of time we talk about children born with autism, what is being done. But what about adults with autism? Mm-hmm. What is happening with them?
Well, we pointed out that autistic children grow up to be autistic adults.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of a revelation to people, because there is at least more conversation in the U.S., and I don't know how it is where the doctor lives, more conversation around children and intervening and trying to have educational supports to help the child, which is very, very, very important. But in the United States, as soon as high school education ends, and sometimes that's at 21, then the amount of services that are available and supports to family vanish. And there are some places that have some good things happening, but very often these adults are home with aging parents that no longer have the energy that they had 25 years earlier or 21 years earlier.
Yes.
And it causes health problems for the caregivers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Dr. Alayenka, what is your experience with your child?
Well, my story is not too dissimilar. It's very, very similar. He's now 32. So
Ooh.
You can imagine I've seen him grow up from a young child with so many tantrums and so many behavioral issues into a nice young man who also still has his own issues, but is coping quite well within Africa where there's very little support. So as I'm listening to the other speaker, you know, sometimes I marvel because we're in the middle of Africa and we're saying we don't have anything. And yet, you know, it's not too different from what's going on around the world. And it's very mm-hmm. true. There's a lot of concentration on children, which is very important. But my take on it is that it's like we're looking for the cure. And we want to cure all these children. And sometimes a cure is not possible. And what is important is the sort of support families and the child will get. And as he becomes an adult, what sort of things in terms of employment, job experience, will he be able to get? So it's amazing that the other speaker is living in America and she's seeing more or less the same or mirroring more or less the same things that occur in Nigeria today. It's very devastating because our government is not even looking at the kids. There's very little support for even the children.
Yes.
And the parents have to take on a lot more support, try to support each other and try to support themselves.
Yes.
But sometimes this is very difficult because the focus in Africa is more on immunization, malnutrition,
yes. HIV,
things,
malaria, and things like that.
And things like mm-hmm. Autism.
Yes, yes, yes. And Ms. Prince said something very interesting that I have to admit, for the many years that I've been covering autism, this is really the first time that someone says this. She said she had indicators when she was pregnant.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is the first time I heard that. And my sister has mm-hmm. two children with autism. She never talked about indicators and all the people I've interviewed. What about in your case? Did you feel something?
Yeah, well, let's put it like this. As a medical student, we were not taught about autism. So when I graduated, I knew nothing about autism until I had a child who was a bit different from everybody else. And those indicators did not occur until he was about three. Even though instinctively as a mother, I knew that there was something wrong, you know, and because we were never taught about autism.
Uh-huh.
We were just on our own. So everybody, you know, my consultants, when I took my son to my consultants, they were telling me that, no, there's nothing like autism in Nigeria. We don't have anything like autism in Nigeria. And it wasn't until I took him to the UK was he actually diagnosed, and that was at the age of three. So it's more or less similar. Usually what we've been told now is that the diagnosis is not so stable when the children are much younger, like 16 months or 24 months. But usually by 3 years, obviously, you would know that, whether this child is on the spectrum or not. So, yes, in Africa, we're not looking for the indicators per se, because people will tell you in Africa that, oh, it's a boy. Well, oh, yeah, boys don't usually talk around this time. Oh, you know, they will grow out of it. So a lot of children are not being identified when they should be identified. So we're identifying kids maybe 7 and 8, which is sometimes ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, Ms. Prince, it seems like there is more and more attention on autism. More people are paying more attention. But back then, 26 years ago, when you had Madison, how was it? Tell us, how was it?
It was very interesting because I think my only encounter with autism when we started to find out about our son was a television program that had been on a number of years earlier where a physician happened to have lost his wife, but they had an autistic son. Mm. And he would come home to this autistic son. And that was the only image that we had. And it was kind of the beginning of the tsunami. Even though autism has been identified, and I think there's a 74-year-old gentleman right now that was one of the first people identified as being the autistic individual, or the first one without the moniker. Mm-hmm. But when our son was born, there were very few supports, and we didn't have role models, and I didn't have other parents to turn to, and the school system was just starting to bump around in this arena. They were doing some good things, but early intervention, we have learned since that time, is so very important. And if parents can get their children diagnosed and start in on some form of helping the child cope with their surroundings, learn to their potential, and look toward as independent a life as possible, mm-hmm. with maybe nudgings along the way of what they may do for a job, can help in the outcomes in the long term. Absolutely. And it's hard when you've got a three-year-old in front of you to really project a non-traditional pathway. When a baby is put in your arms, you picture certain life things going in a particular way. And that doesn't necessarily happen when you receive the diagnosis of autism. Mm.
And Dr. Alayinka, let me have your reaction to what Ms. Prince just spoke about.
Like I said, I'm always amazed that she's living on the other side of the world, and the stories are very similar in the sense that when even now we're not getting the sort of services that adults need to live a more independent life. Yes. And even though in the States you have more services, more structure, and I would say in Nigeria we don't have that type of structure, it's very similar. Unfortunately for us as well, a lot of parents go to the internet and they see all these wonderful things. But in Nigeria, we don't have those wonderful things, so we have to make use of what we've got to do, what we can, uh-huh. with our children and with our adults.
So, ladies, let me ask you this. As mothers who have gone through this and are going through this, where do you think new research should focus on in terms of what is happening now? I mean, they talk about treatment, ABA. Is this even working for many of these children? Let me ask each of you, Ms. Prince, where do you think research should focus these days?
Well, I think we need continued research on what autism is. Mm-hmm. And we need to find out if there are things in the environment that may be affecting our children, or if there is a genetic predisposition. How do you work with making the most successful and positive life possible with a diagnosis?
Yes.
And we do need to continue forward with that. But one of the areas that we see, again, because our foundation is centered on working with adults, there is so little research being done on adults over the age of 21. Mm-hmm. Our National Institutes of Health, in the disbursement of funds for autism research, has less than 3% of their funding going into research on adults, whereas in America, over two-thirds of someone's life is lived as an adult.
Yes.
And 3% of the research is focused on that. I wonder also, as we are researching and looking into the life things in adulthood on the autism spectrum, how many other people we may be able to help with intellectual disabilities, returning from war with PTSD, with traumatic brain injury. It may be a gateway into helping many other populations as well, and we do need the research to be happening so people can have more productive and fruitful lives and reach their potential.
These are very, very good points there. Dr. Alayinka. I know Ms. Prince spoke extensively on new research. Perhaps if you have something to add. Or what I also wanted to ask you is what do you offer at your center? It's this developmental center of Surulere. What kind of services do you offer?
That's for me, I guess.
Yes.
You talk about research, and why I do respect research, but I come from a school of thought that believes in neurodiversity, and I believe that there's more to autism than we're looking at now. Mm-hmm. There are, even in the States, people who believe that autism is a different type of people that have a different way of thinking. They have so many different talents. And why is it we're not tapping into the talents that they bring to the world? The CDC, mm-hmm. as it just started out as a support service for families and younger children. But as I began to develop the services, we were finding out that, just as Ms. Kent said, children become adults. And as a result, we have to keep on evolving the service. So we have a support service. We do assessments. We make a diagnosis. We try to develop appropriate programs that are more African, because it's not everything that is developed outside Africa or outside Nigeria that works within our own cultural system. For instance, I heard you mention ABA, and ABA initially was touted in Nigeria as a cure for autism, but then rapidly parents began to see that it wasn't a cure for autism. It was just a methodology, and some children it worked very well with, and with other children it didn't work at all. We also offer training because we believe in building up capacity right through all the disciplines, so whether it's education, health, or social welfare, because a lot of people within these disciplines have never heard of autism before. Yet, in schools, children on the autism spectrum are being identified, and nobody knows what to do with them. The other thing we do quite well is awareness. Because we're very big on awareness. Just last week, we had a walk. We went about 1,000 people joined us to, you know, just try and make sure that the community begins to understand that there are children that are different. Some of these children might be on the autistic spectrum, and they need to be aware and more compassionate towards their family and their children. And lastly, we do outreach programs whereby we actually train mothers to identify, learn the signs and the symptoms, and then what are you going to do about it? If you don't have a therapist, there's so much you can do with your child so that your child can develop as well. So that's what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Mm, very interesting. And Ms. Prince, go ahead,
please. Wonderful to hear that. And mm-hmm. that's very similar to a lot of the things that are happening in the U.S. I'm hearing so many interesting similarities. Mm-hmm. And the thing about some of the awareness, too, that we've been finding is that other family members of extended family start to become more familiar with what it is, not as fearful, and sometimes able to engage with our autistic children in a more measured and thoughtful way rather than being intimidated.
Mm-hmm. And what do you find, Ms. Prince, through your organization? I know adults with autism have many, many challenges, but what do you find like the most challenging? Is it the fact that they cannot hold a job or they cannot be independent? What is the first priority you will see in terms of challenging?
Well, in the U.S., I think one of the big things is that we are having to identify different types of housing for individuals as they age, because they can't always remain in the family home. One of the biggest challenges for parents is, what is going to happen to my adult child when I'm no longer around?
Mm.
And we don't have, even though we've got a lot of houses out there, we don't necessarily have the right places and the right supports for somebody to get into a living situation. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the other bit of meaning that happens in all of our lives is engagement in the community with employment. And it is estimated that, I will say conservatively, 75% of our population is underemployed or unemployed. And that is very difficult, too, because those on the spectrum need purpose in life and need to feel that they are contributing in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. So when you look at the way autism is being addressed, in terms of health care, where do we stand in the United States? And the, and Doctor, I will come to you to so you can give us the Nigerian perspective. Where do we stand in terms of health insurance and things like that, and providing care for these children? Ms. Price?
Oh, and starting with me?
Yes.
I was waiting for my my colleague to answer that question first.
We can start with her. Perhaps okay, Dr. Alayinka, you can start. Where do you stand in Nigeria? Is it even part of the whole health system in terms
well,
of?
We don't have the privilege of insurance. I remember when I was trying to prepare for this interview, I was looking at a presentation I gave about 2 years ago about Nigeria finding its own way in terms of autism. And one of the things I said that in the United States, you've got insurance. I mean, if I'm sick, then there's a doctor and whoever, I go to the doctor and the insurance pays for this, but we don't have that. And that is where the health system does not support families, even though in Nigeria today we have what we call health medical insurance, it still does not pick up families that have either children with disabilities or children that have autism. So parents are having to pay so much money for therapists. One of the things that we've tried to do is to provide very low cost services, quality services to our families, but get people to sponsor the services so that we can keep the cost of those services as low as possible. We have no insurance.
Okay.
So parents are burdened financially to support their children, not only as children, also as adults. So that's the situation we're in Nigeria. And I think we need to review the whole system at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're running out of time. Ms. Prince, let me have your reaction quickly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're trying to do is we also see another huge need, and that we don't have doctors that feel comfortable in treating our population.
Okay.
Because our population will still have gallbladders and appendix and eyesight and throat issues and cancer and everything that everybody else has as well. So we need specialists not only in what autism is, but we need general specialists that don't feel intimidated by treating our population who may have sensory needs.
Okay.
So
okay.
To deliver good health care is another important component, and we're just barely starting to get in on that in the U.S.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Ms. Jaylin Prince, President of Madison House
Thank
Autism
you.
Foundation, and Dr. Alayinka Akindayomi. Thank you for joining us from Lagos, ladies. It was a pleasure to have you both. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health and keep the conversation going on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.